This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening and welcome to a post-fundraising show, which we're greatly glad for. Tonight on Queer Voices, we're going to be talking to Elizabeth McLean about sisters and an upcoming softball tournament. And doing a segment on Black History Month. Glenn is going to do that. Then we're going to be talking about the upcoming AIDS Foundation Walk, the 2006 Walk with Anissa Hill. All that's coming up, and we're going to be doing some community comment, This Way Out, and a whole number of other things. But before that, we go directly to London and the BBC with the World News.
BBC News with Mary Small. The British historian David Irving has lodged an appeal against the three-year jail sentence handed to him by an Austrian court for denying the Second World War Holocaust, in which millions of Jews were systematically murdered by the Nazis. His lawyer said the court had intended to send a message, but the message was too strong. Speaking after the verdict, Mr. Irving said he was shocked by the sentence. Holocaust denial is a criminal offence in Austria. From Vienna, where the trial took place, Bethany Bell reports.
David Irving looked stunned as the verdict was read out. He'd pleaded guilty to charges that he had, back in 1989, disputed the existence of the gas chambers at Auschwitz. His lawyer, Elmar Kresbach, had asked the court for leniency, saying that Mr. Irving had moderated his views since that time. The prosecution argued that Mr. Irving was a serial falsifier of history who had not changed his opinions. In his summing up, the presiding judge, Peter Liebetreu, said Mr. Irving did not seem to be remorseful.
The British Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, is in Iraq for talks with key political figures about the formation of a new Iraqi government. Mr. Straw's spokesman said he wanted to see for himself the progress being made towards a government of national unity. He's meeting President Talabani and the Prime Minister, Ibrahim Jafri, today. A suspected Bosnian Serb war criminal, Milan Lukic, has been extradited from Argentina to face the United Nations Tribunal at The Hague. Mr. Lukic was put on a flight to Spain en route to the Netherlands. He's accused of running a paramilitary group, the White Eagles, which allegedly murdered more than 100 Muslims during the Bosnian War in the 1990s. He'd been wanted for more than 5 years before he was arrested in the Argentine capital, Buenos Aires, last year. Rescuers in Mexico are working against the clock to reach 65 miners who've been trapped underground for nearly 2 days. The men were carrying limited supplies of oxygen, and Mexican officials say hopes are fading of finding them alive. With the details, here's Tom Gibb.
Rescuers believe they're only about 100 meters from two of the missing men, but they admit they're moving painfully slowly. And most of those missing are thought to be much deeper inside the mine, some 2 to 3 kilometers from the entrance. Outside, women relatives wailed with despair when given the news of the slow progress of the rescue effort. The mine, close to the U.S. border in northern Mexico, is owned by the company Grupo Mexico. Company officials have denied union claims that there had been concerns expressed over safety before the accident.
You're listening to the news from the BBC. Riot police in Uganda have used tear gas and water cannon against opposition supporters gathered at a sports stadium in the capital, Kampala. The police say they needed to clear the crowd from the main road near the stadium. Correspondents say stones were thrown before the police fired tear gas. The crowd had been waiting for the arrival of the opposition presidential candidate, Kizza Besigye, for his last campaign rally ahead of Thursday's election. In a BBC interview, Dr. Besigye accused President Museveni of stifling opposition.
The only thing you have to understand is that whoever poses a threat to President Museveni's power is an enemy, according to him, and must be dealt with as such.
The authorities in Nigeria have imposed a curfew in the northern city of Bauchi after at least 10 people were killed in violence between Muslims and Christians. The fighting started after reports of an alleged desecration of the Muslim holy book, the Quran. More than 40 people were injured during the riot. The English Football Association says the inaugural match at the new Wembley Stadium, England's national football venue, will not take place as planned in May because of fears the stadium will not be completed in time. The Football Association has transferred the showpiece FA Cup final to the Millennium Stadium in the Welsh capital, Cardiff. Gordon Farquhar reports.
The FA took the decision to go for Cardiff after a site visit and discussions with their Wembley partners. It seems they were unable to get the 100% assurance they were seeking from the builders' multiplex that all would be finished in time. The Millennium Stadium has been booked for months as a standby and has hosted the FA Cup final since the old Wembley Stadium was taken out of commission in 2001. Multiplex say they're disappointed by the FA's decision but remain committed to delivering a stadium to be proud of. They say they're still hoping for substantial completion of the project by the end of next month.
At the Winter Olympics in Turin, the Russian duo Tatiana Navka and Roman Kostomarov have won gold medals in the ice dancing event. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
And I guess we're less a few people tonight.
Yes, we have someone with car trouble, someone who was taking the night off anyway, and then JD's just too busy putting together Queer Music Heritage. So
it's us.
It's us, Jack.
It's us.
Back to the olden days.
Yes, the standby crew. Tonight we have a number of good interviews scheduled tonight, including one with the sisters.
And then Glenn has his friend Eric Thomas in to talk about being black and gay. And he'll also talk with Clarence Lanier about the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church All Gospel Service in honor of Black History Month.
And then Anissa Hill is going to come on and talk about the AIDS Walk 2006, which is coming up in a few weeks. And, you know, you can sign up online. You can donate online. It's really neat.
Right. And they had a big full page. Ad in the special edition of the Chronicle. I think they threw it to everybody's house, and this was in it.
I missed that.
Yeah, it's a big poster about register today and all the information for the AIDS Walk. I think this is the 19th annual walk, and that'll be March 12th.
Wow, how time flies.
Really.
And then we're going to probably talk about a few things going on.
Oh, we'll talk about stuff.
Okay.
We'll talk some trash. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
Okay. Well, first, let's talk with Liz McLean. Hi, Liz. Our friend Liz McLean, and she's here tonight representing Assisters. And first, tell us what Assisters is, because we don't want to presume that everyone knows.
Well, absolutely. And back at you for happy President's Day. I want to make sure we
likewise.
Get that in. Okay. We are a group that has been around. This is our 10th year.
Wow.
In the Houston area. We started and still are a volunteer organization. We provide non-medical in-home support to lesbians in our community in the greater Houston metropolitan area. Currently, we have 28 clients. That's an increase of a third in a year in the Houston area, 24 teams and about 90 volunteers working with us. And we've actually served 60 clients over time and had 400 women and men work with us.
And these are women who are facing life-challenging and sometimes life-threatening illnesses or conditions. And need a little bit of assistance. They may not have family, or they may have a partner, but the partner can't carry the whole burden, and they need some relief.
Yeah, absolutely. Half of our clients, in fact, live alone. The others often have family or partners who are struggling as both caregiver and sole provider. So we provide a lot of support in that instance for those clients. And the types of diseases, we've got autoimmune, brain and spinal cord injury, cancer, a stroke, the whole range of debilitating illnesses that our clients suffer from.
Is there an age range of clients? Or
it's across the board. I've seen people in their 20s. I've seen people in their 80s. And currently, in fact, the client for my team is in her 30s.
Mm-hmm. And what is the team? What does that mean?
That team is made up of 4 to 8 members, volunteers, who come together and work in a support mode. They're going to do meal delivery, errands. Maybe they walk the dog. Maybe they do housework. In some instances, they will take these clients to medical and dental appointments. Those sorts of things. We're very involved in that. In addition, the past couple of years, we've moved into doing a lot more in terms of food cards. Kroger has been very helpful in letting us provide that to our clients who need those. We also have taxi vouchers for medical appointments. And we're now providing support group, an actual support group for our clients at Behring.
Wow.
So we've moved into those realms recently as well.
And is there still a need for more volunteers?
Yes. We've grown up by a third in a year, absolutely. We, in fact, have a waiting list at this point, and we need clients, and that's one of the reasons that, volunteers. It's one of the reasons we've moved into this special event we're going to do on Saturday, March 4th, which is our first annual softball tournament for sisters. And it's the brainchild of our public relations vice president, Sol Lara, and her partner.
Yeah. Just an aside here, I understand Sol's mother is very ill, and we want to send out good wishes to her and her family.
Yes, absolutely. And she wanted to be here very badly, and she has really been working absolutely and her partner very hard, as well as Carol Clark on this particular project. So we feel
now there's good
that.
People.
Those are good people. In fact, Carol's one of our coaches, but that's another long story.
Yeah, she would be, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she would be. What we found. And actually, Sol came up with this concept, was the idea, why don't we do something fun in the community, something that a lot of women in our community have liked to do traditionally, which is softball, and let's go out and have a game. And it's also a good starting point for the Montrose Softball Leagues and for them to get a startup game early on.
Okay, is that how it's being done? It's actual teams that already exist? Or
this
people, what is it? I mean, how do you do it?
Okay, this is an interesting
point. Can I be a cheerleader?
Absolutely. you and Jack can be cheerleaders or whatever you want to be. What we've got this year are 8 teams. We are recreational teams. This is not serious, hard, softball folks. For people coming out and expecting to see us on the Olympics, it's not going to be there. In fact, tonight was going to be staged as a non-jock, me and Sol, who was a serious jock. So we are actually going to have an assisters team out there, but we're also inviting other people to come and have 8 teams, as I said. It's from 8 to 7, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, March 4th, at Memorial Park, fields 4 and 5. And we invite people to come. We're going to have a lot of our clients there who have been in softball before, as well as their families. We're also going to have concessions, and we are being helped by in that regard by the Houston Pride Band. They're going to be splitting the concessions with us that day.
And how are funds raised through the tournament?
Well, we actually are taking money, a registration fee from our folks, from our teams, which is a fairly low one at this point. It's $125, which is very low for that sort of thing. The other thing is we've been very fortunate this year. We went out and got some underwriters, and I need to thank some sponsors if I can do that. It's not exactly commercial radio.
Well, sure, I think it's fine to say who is supporting the community.
Yeah, these are folks who've been very...
You don't have to say the amounts.
No.
We've tried to avoid... dollars.
We don't want to get into the FCC moment. Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot of support from the Gay and Lesbian Yellow Pages and their Gay Yellow organization. Chances. Plant Again Sports has been very helpful, and your own Montrose, our own Montrose Starbucks. And so we have been able to get most of this underwritten, so what money we do raise would be going back into our coffers directly. I think more than that, we are very interested in getting people attracted to the concept of our organization and having a good time. It's not just about fundraising in this case. It's much more
now,
than that.
Tori Williams was, I guess, the founding mother of the sisters. She kind of came about it through experiencing some friends that were ill and in need of help. And she thought, you know, we've done this in the AIDS community. And she had worked in that environment of having the care teams that formed. And so she took that model and brought it in to form a sisters. And along with some other folks that were, you know, you can never do anything alone. And Tori will be the first one to tell you that. It takes all of us. But I guess it was a slow start. There were just a few people at first, and it's one of those things that has grown. And like you said, it's been 10 years now.
Yeah, and we're kind of, it's interesting, we're growing in areas that we didn't expect to, like the new support groups, but we still have a lot of people who were there originally who have been there from the beginning, and also people have come back. Our current president, Renee Tappy, was one of the founding mothers. So we're looking at ways that we are going to need to change as the population of Houston and the greater area changes as well, and how we do things beyond just Loop 610.
Mm-hmm.
We're very involved in that as well.
Now, one of the things that takes place with the sisters is the second Saturday of each month, there's an in-service. And that sounds very technical or, right. you know, kind of deterring. But I've attended some of those because Good. It is open to the community.
Absolutely.
To attend. It's a speaker. It's about an hour-long program. Mm-hmm. And they've had some excellent speakers.
Well, we're going to be bringing in some people this spring who are going to be fairly interesting. We're going to do some talks about our clients, also some the regular routine of looking at different diseases and impacts and things along those lines. It's generally 11 o'clock on Saturday, second Saturday mornings up at Bering, and absolutely the community is invited to get to pay attention to these.
Now, if I wanted to volunteer for a sisters, what kind of time commitment am I looking at?
Good question. If you're on the board, you'll be there forever. Just kidding, everybody. But if you are on a team, generally no more than 4 to 8 hours a month. We would ask you to come to our second Saturday, of course, and work with your team. But it's a fairly limited amount of time that we require.
So what happens in that second Saturday? How is that structured?
Well, what we do is someone who comes into a sisters is going to get, of course, initial training on how to deal with clients. Once they're in our system, we have three different components to second Saturday. The team meets, determines what kind of needs the client has for the next month, does some scheduling. The second part involves circles. These are facilitators that meet with the teams basically to do some emotional support and debriefing of the teams. And then we have in-service as well. And also we've gotten into the habit recently of being a little more social and going out to lunch with each other as a group, and that's been a real good thing. Mm-hmm. And we do have breakfast for those of you who want to be there at 8:30. We do provide that too, so there are some reasons.
There has to be incentive for me to get up that early on a Saturday.
No kidding. I'm driving in from Paraland. So you imagine it's got to be good incentive. So, yeah, that we've tried to do things to make it as pleasurable as possible. We also do announcements to let people know what's going on in the community.
Now, is there a way for someone to volunteer without actually being on a care team? They might think that's a little bit too much, but there's some other way they could...
Absolutely.
Assist
the sisters, yes. We have a number of committees that people can join. That's certainly one of the biggest things that we need assistance on in terms of whether it's a fundraiser or putting together an event like this. We welcome people who might be able to share their time in terms of in-service work. Yeah, we have lots of different ways that we can put people to work, not just volunteering time mm-hmm. with a client, yes.
Mm-hmm. And the event on Saturday, the 4th, the mm-hmm. Softball tournament, what do you need from the community? You know, are the teams already signed up?
The teams
are
signed up.
It's too late to get on a team if you're not already on one.
We're going to have 15 people on each team, and I think we might have room for two more. And if I'm wrong, Sol, you can shoot me later. But people can go to our website, which is assisthers1word.org, and download the tournament application and look at that. But we'd like people to come out and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing a lot of outreach. We'll have our clients there that day. We'll also have some clients will choose to come that day. We'll have awards for mm-hmm. the teams. And
cool.
we're going to do, yeah. I mean, where else can you get medals, trophies, those kind of things? We just want to have kind of a start over of softball in the volunteer communities, if you will, and get the softball league going this year. And so we're excited
So
about
you
that.
Invite the community to come out
Absolutely.
And cheer the teams on.
Right,
and
or boo us if you want, or laugh, or however you want to come together.
No, we're always going to be supportive.
Or laugh, I mean, really, when
well,
I'm batting.
Some people would be laughing. I mean,
yeah.
if I played, they would be, that's for sure.
Right.
And so it's just a day to get out, and hopefully the weather will warm up by then, and it'll be a beautiful day.
I'm sure we'll come up with alternatives. I was very pleased with our coaches this week. They had planned to practice outside. Y'all may have noticed it was a little cold outside and raining. They very quickly realigned and got some batter practice cages set up for folks, and so teams were practicing. So I imagine we can figure something out. We will have a party of sorts, chances after the fact. So, yeah, mm-hmm. we're hoping that we'll be able to avoid the weather.
Mm-hmm. And if someone wants to get involved and assist hers as a volunteer, or maybe mm-hmm. they're a person who needs services,
right.
How can they contact? And that is assist and the word hers, H-E-R-S.
Correct.
It's very clever. And they put it all together. Uh-huh. Assist hers.
Well, we created I'm spilling over here trying to find our phone number, of course, having, you know, questionably put it somewhere this evening.
It's assisthirst.org on the internet.
Right, assisthirst.org.
And then when I get the information, mm-hmm. I put it on the Feminist Online Network, the email list
right.
that I run.
That's a way, or if you will just come to our website, we have the phone number, we have the P.O. box, all those good things, so people can, in fact, learn of us that way. We're listed in every phone directory in the city, you can imagine. And I did want to mention something that I'm very proud of in terms of our volunteers. They know about this. Tomorrow, we are going to be accepting the GLBT's Chambers Nonprofit Ally of the Year Award.
Oh, wonderful.
And this is because of the work that our volunteers have done on behalf of our clients, and I think that this is something that they need to be very proud of in that regard.
Certainly, certainly.
Absolutely.
And the phone number is 713-521-4628.
Great cover,
that
Jack.
That Jack, he's just
he's
on
something
it,
I'm
isn't
going,
he?
Jack,
he's
look that up.
Well, Liz McLean has been with us talking about Assisters and their upcoming fundraising softball tournament on Saturday, March the 4th. Be there or be talked about.
Well, you may be talked about even if you're there, but enjoy yourselves. Please come join us. We would like to have everyone in the community show up if they could.
Thank you, Liz.
Sure.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 18th, 2006. Marriage was on the minds of government leaders in several countries this week. A Charter of Fundamental Rights and Freedoms has been under review in Jamaica since 1991, promoted as amending the Caribbean nation's constitution to better protect human rights. However, following a major press conference by numerous religious leaders this week, expressing concerns that the new charter's language could allow same-gender marriage, government officials issued assurances to the contrary and went even further. Justice Minister A.J. Nicholson issued a statement saying that there was no intention whatsoever on the part of the government or the Joint Select Committee of Parliament that any door should be opened by provisions in the proposed Charter of Rights and Freedoms or otherwise to decriminalize homosexuality or to pave the way for same-sex marriages. Nicholson said JFLAG, the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, told him it would be content if the offense of buggery was removed from the statute books, but that the committee's decision was let the parliament rule on that.
Portuguese campaigners submitted a petition to their parliament this week with over 5,000 signatures, including those from celebrities and leftist politicians, urging passage of legal marriage equality. Under Portuguese law, petitions with more than 4,000 valid signatures must be considered for full debate in the parliament. Pressure on the Portuguese government has been building in recent months to follow neighboring Spain, which established civil marriage equality last year.
As expected, President Václav Klaus of the Czech Republic this week vetoed a bill establishing limited legal recognition of registered gay and lesbian couples. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek supported the bill along with 86 deputies and had called on Klaus to sign the measure into law. The bill now returns to the lower house of parliament, where it takes 101 of the 200 deputies to override the veto. In an October poll, only 30% of Czech citizens opposed the introduction of registered partnerships, while 62% supported it.
Under the UK Civil Partnership Act, any British national living abroad can register a same-gender civil union in a British embassy or consulate, as long as local law allows it. The British consulate in Hong Kong says it has received several inquiries, but can't sanction the registrations until it receives a formal no objection from the Hong Kong government. A Home Affairs Bureau Protocol Division spokesperson said this week that the government is still considering the matter. Similar requests have reportedly been approved at British embassies in Japan, Vietnam, Venezuela, Turkmenistan, Colombia, and Belarus.
Some members of Australia's parliament have increasingly been voicing support for British-style civil partnerships, and activists lobbying in Canberra this week say that support is building. Prime Minister John Howard has vocally opposed same-gender marriage and civil unions, last month calling the latter a cop-out. But one of the country's leading activists, Rodney Croom, said, "The commitment of those MPs who question this stance has left us with a renewed sense of optimism." Attorney General Philip Ruddock recently required registered marriage celebrants at all weddings to announce the country's legal definition of marriage, amended in August 2004 to be exclusively between a man and a woman. Australian marriage equality spokesperson Peter Furness said that the Conservative government's continuing attacks on queer couples was becoming obsessive.
In marriage-obsessed U.S. state legislatures, New Hampshire and West Virginia this week rejected bills that would have added language to their respective constitutions banning legal recognition of same-gender couples. Virginia's Senate handed marriage equality activists a partial victory while clearing the way for a ballot measure there by unanimously approving language that will describe for voters all the restrictions a proposed constitutional amendment would create. The amendment states in part that this Commonwealth and its political subdivision shall not create or recognize a legal status for relationships of unmarried individuals that intends to approximate the design, qualities, significance, or effects of marriage, nor shall they create or recognize another union, partnership, or other legal status to which is assigned the rights, benefits, obligations, qualities, or effects of marriage. If the House of Delegates concurs, Virginia voters will see the entire text of the amendment when they go to the polls on November 7th.
And the Idaho legislature finalized a proposed constitutional amendment this week that, if ratified by the state's voters in November, will deny same-gender couples any civil rights. The amendment stipulates that a marriage between a man and a woman is the only domestic legal union that shall be valid or recognized. Some critics have charged that the measure is so vaguely worded that it could affect the legal rights of unmarried heterosexual couples.
New Jersey's Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in the lawsuit brought by seven gay and lesbian couples who charged that the state's marriage laws are a discriminatory violation of the New Jersey Constitution. The case began working its way through lower courts in 2002 and is the oldest such state lawsuit now playing out across the country. No one would speculate on when the justices will rule, but the court has often handed down opinions in August.
New York marriage equality advocates this week suffered two judicial losses, but celebrated a legislative victory last week. Republican Governor George Pataki signed a bill allowing same-gender domestic partners to determine the disposition of a partner's remains. Alan Van Capel of the Empire State Pride Agenda said it was the first time in New York state law that same-sex relationships have been given priority over a blood relative, and called the bill a victory for our families.
But the mid-level New York appellate court has ruled unanimously against same-gender couples seeking marriage licenses. In a unanimous decision, the five-judge panel said, "The legislature is where the changes to marriage should be addressed. Everyone expects the issue to eventually be decided by the state's highest court, the Court of Appeals."
And that court issued a sharply divided 4-3 opinion this week that New York City's equal benefits ordinance was unenforceable. The measure had required large city contractors to offer the same employee benefits to lesbi gays as to its hetero workers. Similar ordinances have long been in place in San Francisco and several other cities. The New York City Council overrode Mayor Michael Bloomberg's veto of their ordinance in 2004, but Bloomberg refused to enforce it. The council then went to court, using a procedure designed to compel public officials to follow a duly enacted law. The three dissenters on the court sided with the council, arguing that an executive does not have the authority to ignore a law based on his or her personal opinions. The headline of the New York Times story about the decision announced, "Mayor need not enforce certain laws, court rules."
Homosexuality itself is illegal in the United Arab Emirates and neighboring Muslim Gulf countries. In November, UAE authorities raided what was described as a gay wedding in the desert resort city of Guntut, arresting 26 men. A government official announced this week that 11 men have confessed to practicing homosexuality and were sentenced to 5 years in prison for that offense and 1 year for obscenity. Another man was sentenced to 1 year in prison for obscenity, but was acquitted of homosexuality charges, while 14 others have been released after being found not guilty. He said the verdicts could be appealed. In November, the UAE's Interior Ministry said it would be giving the men hormone treatments to cure them of their homosexuality. But when pressed this week by a U.S. government official, a ministry spokesperson repudiated that.
More than 40,000 people were on hand for the 11th Gay Pride Parade in Melbourne, Australia earlier this month. 93 contingents traveled down Fitzroy Street to Kentani Gardens, where a concert was held. The city fire department marched for the first time, joining a group of about 40 state and local police officers.
More than 1,000 revelers, reportedly from some 40 nations, also turned out for the annual Gay Pride Parade in Phuket, Thailand. The celebration was aimed in part at helping revive gay tourism on Phuket's Patong Beach, which suffered a sharp drop-off in visitors following the December 2004 tsunami.
But finally, organizers planning a first-ever Pride parade in Moscow in May have run into stiff opposition. A spokesperson for Mayor Yuri Lushkov said that such events caused outrage in society, particularly among religious leaders. The bishop of the Russian Orthodox Church compared homosexuality to leprosy. Russia's chief rabbi told Mos News that if the parade is held, it would be a blow for morality, and a leading Muslim cleric made headlines this week by threatening violent protests against anyone participating, saying they should be flogged. Chief Mufti Talgat Tajuddin claimed that any normal person would do that, Muslims and Orthodox Christians alike. He added that the protests might be even more intense than protests abroad against those controversial cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. Parade organizers responded with threats of their own, however, saying that if Moscow officials deny their formal application, they might file a complaint with the European Court of Human Rights.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 18th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Rick Watts.
My boyfriend's always had girlfriend. That was never any secret to me. No. While he was busy slipping, sliding on the down low, I was just as out and free,
out and free
as I could be. There were even times when I hung out with my man and his lady. I know that sounds shady. I can't tell it if she was too blind to see
the signs of
a careless and love affair. What's going on underneath the nose? But I'm not the one who made any kind of commitments between me and the woman's not my wife. She is. He's the one who made the vow. Always be true. Don't get upset with me. My bed's where he chose to be. My boyfriend.
My boy.
Always had girlfriend.
Always had girlfriend.
Perhaps a lady belongs to you. I could be, but I'm not gonna tell you that.
Not
at least. Although you really need to consider the fact that sometimes that's the way things be.
Your man could be keeping a secret. Heaven lies.
Heaven lies.
After making love to another man over there.
Somewhere on the other side.
Girl, I know these things.
I know these things.
Be true. For about 3 years.
What are your husband's
next to me, you see, I was the one who had him first. So many tears I cried
and again.
I was so in love, couldn't help myself. Didn't know what to do. Was the pain cut so deep when I overheard the conversation he was having with you? You and him, but he
my boy,
my boy,
my
my boy,
my friend,
boy,
my boy,
yes.
Friends.
Now, that being Black History Month, that was something that J.D. found for us in his extensive library, titled appropriately enough, My Boyfriends Have Always Had Girlfriends. I'm Glenn Holt, and you're listening to Queer Voices, and in the studio with me, Eric Thomas and Clarence Lanier. And Clarence, I understand that sometime this month, your church, the church that you attend, is going to have something to do with gospel music.
Yes, Gospel Train, MCC Church.
Gospel Train.
Mm-hmm, that's
okay.
The title.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have a gospel concert from 9 o'clock service and 11 o'clock service.
And when is that?
This Sunday on the 26th.
Coming up this Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the entire service is going to be gospel music.
Yes. Yes.
And how is that going to be done?
Well, we are, like I said, the title is Gospel Train, and we'll be basically feeding off that, taking up new and old music and binding together and just having a really good spiritual time, enjoying good poetry and poems would be...
Poetry?
Uh-huh. I believe chose by a poem by Maya Angelou.
Uh-huh.
I'm not quite certain which one, though, but
okay,
it's all going to be good. So,
uh-huh. And so the choir is going to sort of, choir, is that the correct
yes.
term for it, is going to process through the congregation?
Yes, the gospel ensemble. We're going to go up, come up from the congregation up onto the stage.
Mm-hmm. And costumes?
Well, we're various different costumes. Basically, different eras. Myself, we're in 70. Look,
mm-hmm.
Basically just give the illusion of getting on a train. And it'll be basically titled Gospel Ensemble, Gospel Train featuring the Gospel Ensemble Choir.
Okay. And, of course, this is a church service, so it's not like there's a charge to
get. No, it's not a charge.
Okay.
So everyone's invited.
And what time does it start?
9 a.m. service and 11 a.m. service.
You're going to do it at both services?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is the MCCR?
Uh-huh. Right. 11th and T.C. Jester.
11th and T.C. Jester.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Eric is joining us because we wanted to have a conversation about how gay rights relates to the civil rights movement. Both go back a long way, of course. Civil rights movement goes back even farther.
Yeah, it does. We basically have to understand that, unfortunately, that with the civil rights movement, there was a lot of pain and there was a lot of struggle. But we have to take that same pain and that same struggle and make it apply to our own movement in the same sense that we have to remember what the basis of what the civil rights movement was hoping to accomplish. And in the same sense, bring it to our own communities. What the civil rights movement basically wanted to accomplish was human rights for us all. And they still do want to accomplish that. And even with our gay rights movement, we have to move from it being a gay thing or it being a gay movement and just in a sense making it a human rights movement to where me as a black man can get rights as well as me being a black gay man.
Sometimes I sense in some of the things that I read that in some parts of the black community, there's resistance to being identified with the gay rights movement as a civil rights movement, and others are more supportive. And then within the gay community, sometimes you find that the gay community is supportive of the civil rights movement from the black perspective, and sometimes not.
You are right. There are people that don't feel that the civil rights movement should be linked to what we consider to be the gay rights movement. And that comes through the fact of what we personally personally feel about homosexuality and our personal views against homosexuality. It's in its own self, it's its own racism, mostly internalized. But also, when you get to the point of being wanting gay rights and you do not include the civil rights movement in the same sense to where you are allowing racism to continue to propagate within your own clubs and your own lives, then you can't expect for other people to really see you as a true movement or truly give you what you really truly want. We first have to actually look within ourselves and allow ourselves to get down the barriers or to erase the barriers which we have before we're able to move on and progress as a race of people and as a gay movement.
Do you see racism within the gay community?
I see it all the time, pretty much. Yeah.
How so?
it's very subtle. It's not blatant. This whole thing's about, you know, let me see your ID. I remember a few years back when we still had Heaven before it became South Beach, them asking me to show two forms of ID, but yet they couldn't provide me with what two forms of ID was, or actually they wanted to see my driver's license or my Texas ID and another form of state-given ID. That in itself is a form of racism because they don't want you in that place at that time. Another form is like when you go to a club that doesn't, that you spend your money at, and they do not really recognize you as a social group, in a sense, meaning that nothing that they play, nothing that's about them, symbolizes that, hey, you're part of our community.
Is there something that would?
There are a lot of things that would. I mean, I think when you welcome someone into your home, you want them to feel as comfortable as possible. When you cook a dinner, you don't cook something that someone doesn't eat. You make it...
Right.
You try to make it as comfortable as it can be for everyone. And the same way you have to look at your clubs. I mean, when you play music or that you have a bar scene, you want to make sure that as long as you address your Latino community or your Latino patrons, you also want to address your African-American patrons as well. I mean, I understand there's a lot of hip-hop music that I really personally don't stand for or can't stand for, but a lot of it's on the top 40.
Okay, and it's sort of then your experience, I guess, that you're not finding that music in the clubs?
I'm not finding that music in the clubs, not a lot. I mean, I go to one club particularly that I really do like, and they play a lot of 70s music, and it's an old school beat to it, and it's amazing to me. I really enjoy going there. But then I walk across the street and go to another club, and there's nothing that I can identify with or either understand, and so it's not even Madonna, you know.
I see Clarence nodding in agreement over there.
No, we were talking about earlier about the experience I had at one of the bars where someone, Caucasian, went, two people ahead of me went into the bar with a headband on his head and they let him walk in. Well, I walk in, we had to walk in, they told me I couldn't come in and take my headband off, and I felt offended and discriminated because a person of Caucasian was allowed to go in, and me being African American, I wasn't had the ability to go in without taking off my headpiece. So I felt very offended and discriminated too.
I mean, like on today, there is a, there's now a new show. I don't know if you're, and probably you guys have talked about it, but the new cable network, Logo. They do a very good job of including African-American culture and African-Americans into their mix of programming in the same sense. They actually have a gay-based show, something like Queer as Folk, pretty much, but it's about African-Americans. It's called Noah's Ark. And unfortunately, I know the clubs that I go to personally, you know, they're very big on, what's the word, the best word to look for it, they're very big on promoting gay movies, gay TV, gay culture, whatever the case is, but yet I don't hear anything about Noah's Ark when I go there. They don't have a screening of it every Sunday. I can understand that. I think it's only shown on, I think Logo is probably only shown on the, on a cable or satellite stations, but, you know, is that the excuse that we want to use, that we can still promote everything else about gay culture, but when you have African-American gay culture, why don't we go ahead and promote that too? It's also showing a positive light to us as being blacks and to us as being gay, period.
Well, I can admit that within our show here, within Queer Voices, we sometimes, in discussing the show amongst ourselves, doing planning and so on, we sometimes feel like we're not connected enough with the black community because we don't have black participants, and so we're just not really aware of issues like that.
I think, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think we all have our own faults, because sometimes the biggest thing is that if we don't sit and we don't think about what we're not doing, we can actually pass over it. Or if we don't think about, you know what, hey, I have a black friend, let me talk to him about it. What issues do you go through, or what issues do we all go through? I think sometimes you have to sit and you have to just say, you know what, let's talk. Because if you ask any African-American person that you go to in the club and ask them, what is your experience here in this club, or what has been your experience as far as going out in the gay community, my story and Clarence's story are pretty much going to be similar and the same. You're going to get the same story.
Wow. Okay. That's actually a really good place to end this conversation, is to encourage everyone who's listening to continue the conversation at home with your friends. You know, what are your experiences like? Eric Thomas and Clarence Lanier, thank you so much for being on Queer Voices with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to Queer Voices. Cowboy Hat from the album Radiator by Brianna Lane. And before the interview that I did with Eric and Clarence, we had My Boyfriends Have Always Had Girlfriends. That was by Brian Washington, and that was from the album Shades of Rebellion. You have comments?
We have comments.
Well, that song is a good segue into the news from the, I don't know if it's called the British Academy Awards,
it's
but
called,
it's like...
It's the British Academy of Film and Television Arts.
But at that, Jake Gyllenhaal won, I don't know if it was a supporting actor or acting.
He was considered the supporting actor.
Okay, Jake Gyllenhaal from Brokeback Mountain. And didn't that Brokeback win another award there?
It won four. Actually, it was a big award winner. And if I'm not mistaken, it won four awards, including Best Picture.
Wow.
Which was not quite expected because Constance Gardner was considered the underdog, being a British film. And was a very good film also, Constance Gardner. But Brokeback Mountain won the best film, and it won, I think, like I said, three other Anne Lee, the director.
Uh-huh.
So it's just sort of amazing. I didn't expect it to get this much momentum heading into the Academy Awards.
Well, it really is a jewel of a movie on so many levels, and it is a breakthrough movie in more than anyone ever dared hope that it could be.
Yes, and in fact, I was looking at The Advocate, and it was saying, why aren't we giving some credit to gay actors who play heterosexual roles? Well, you know, I mean, you got to admit it. I mean, here are two top actors who play gay roles in a very out gay movie. You know, it's not the first movie ever. I mean, Making Love was like also sort of a mainstream movie.
Right. There's been lots of movies over the years.
Philadelphia.
I expect all of them to be perfect in their portrayals. One of the things is just the caliber of the acting. I mean, Heath Ledger, being Australian, when you hear him talk in his regular voice, it's just like, wait a minute, you know? Yeah, and he did such a good job of that. But the way they conveyed the emotions, I think, is really what did it. I mean, that look Jake Gyllenhaal does in the side view mirror, looking back, I mean, just what was in his heart, you could see in his face.
Certainly, Ann Lee did a fabulous this film with the scenery, the slow pace of the way the movie went, and you're looking back at the mid-60s, I guess it was,
yeah,
the time frame, which is just, you know, and being out in the middle of nowhere where you didn't have contact to a major metropolitan area. Very interesting. There's a film also playing now downtown at the Algenica, and that film is called Gay Sex in the 80s.
70s. In the
70s, yes.
The pre-AIDS period.
Which was rather interesting. It's a little bit hard to watch because basically they blow up a lot of home film type stuff, and on the big screen it sort of is a little bit hard to watch.
It's
with
not
the
a polished film. It's a
exactly.
Documentary.
And of course it's a documentary.
Yeah.
Rather interesting of how right after Stonewall, how the mores sort of changed in New York. And the fact that, you know, gay sex was so repressed in the 60s, and then we moved to the 70s.
All of a sudden it was a free-for-all.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Not that either of us was involved in anything like that. But the other thing is it was kind of that way for everyone. I wasn't a
lesbian
then.
Well, I think for the public in general, the non-gays, it was probably a few years earlier than that.
Mm-hmm.
With the, you know, 60s and everything going on in the 60s. There's a great PBS series called The 60s. I think it's like a 5 or 6, or I think it's an 8-part series, actually. And you can actually rent it from Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm pushing Netflix. Or you can probably buy it from PBS.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, how it gives the... Well, what I love about that series, it sort of talks about World War II was over with, and then we were sort of in this era of there's no limits because everybody moved out in the suburbs. Of course, we're talking about generally white people, and there was sort of the rebellious of the kids seeing all this racism that was going on, and the fact that they went down and, you know, some college students went down there and to the South to help black people get registered. They also found out in their colleges that there were a lot of barriers that they thought were crazy, so that's when all the unrest happened at the campuses. rather interesting how it sort of sets the stage and brings it back and talks about that. There's also another film called Berkeley in the 60s, which focuses mostly just on the college, the University of California at Berkeley.
The hotbed of...
Yes, yes. Well, one of the things that was said in the film is that, you know, when we were growing up, we used to have all these 16-millimeter films in school, and one of the films would talk about, well, all these sort of deviants are out at these schools, and so people went there because they wanted to be with the deviants. And I'm paraphrasing a bit. Another film that is going to be released on video tomorrow is Rent, which didn't do so well in the box office, but it's a very well-done film, although some people says it took a little bit too long to be made into a film, and that's why maybe it lost some
of its... when it was a play on Broadway, it was kind of touched on the pulse of the period that it set in.
Right, which is still running on Broadway.
Right, and Anthony Rapp, who is from the cast of Rent, is the Grand Marshal for this year's AIDS Walk,
wow,
by the way.
What a segue.
Yeah. And speaking of AIDS in the black community, just over half of the new infections with the AIDS virus in the United States is in blacks, U.S. researchers reported on Monday, February 6th. A study of detailed data from 33 states shows that 156,000 new cases of HIV infection between 2001 and 2004, 51% were in non-Hispanic blacks, although blacks make up just 13% of the population in those states. The good news is that the rate of the new infections declined in black women and in many black men, with the exception of men having sex with other men, the team at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported. Despite reductions in diagnosis among African-American men and women, HIV continues to pose a major health threat, the CDC said in a statement. Despite possible signs of success, HIV continues to exact a disproportionate and devastating toll on African-Americans. The CDC's Tanjay Durant and colleagues found that the rate of HIV diagnosis fell by 6.8% annually among black women and 4.4% among black men between 2001 and 2004. But blacks still had a substantially higher infection rate than other ethnic groups. The CDC team told the Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunity Infections being held in Denver. The HIV diagnosis rate even fell by 9.7% every year on average among black male users of injected drugs, the CDC study found. The human immunodeficiency virus that causes AIDS is spread by sex, homosexual and heterosexual, by sharing needles with someone who is infected or via blood transfusions. Infected mothers can pass the virus to their babies. The virus infects close to 40 million people worldwide and more than a million people in the United States. The CDC estimates that 40,000 Americans become infected with HIV each year. A second study presented at the same conference found that 32% of black men in Baltimore who had sex with men, which includes homosexual and bisexual activity, were infected with HIV. So some interesting statistics there, some good news and some bad news. And once again, a reminder that AIDS can be prevented, and there's ways to do that, and it pays you to find out what to do, how to avoid becoming infected, and then also what you need to do should you think you're infected, and getting tested and getting services and help so that it doesn't spread. And that's part of what we do here on Queer Voices, is try to educate and get the word out so that people have the tools that they need to be informed and know where the resources are.
Yeah, even though this administration pretty much wants to stop condom distribution and just thinks abstinence is the only answer.
You know, March 18th, there's going to be a anti-war protest, but
here?
yes, here in Houston, I think maybe all over the country, but, you know, once again, we're reminded on so many levels, and you see this when there's the war protest, that people aren't out just protesting the war. They're totally protesting this administration and its policies. Just amazing, you know, the way they want to keep everything secret, and there's so miscommunications. And did you hear that little piece with Condi Rice, and when she was being questioned and she was citing the statistics and the senator saying, well, wait a minute, I just read, and, you know, what he had contradicted what she was saying. And it's like, well, she was trying to justify what she was saying, and then she says, well, this is the capacity. The statistics I'm giving is the capacity for there to be more water available to people in Iraq after the war, and the capacity for them to have better sewage after the war. Like maybe the war was a good thing because they got these services, but the reality is those services have not improved. They've gone down.
Well, and just as last week after the shooting by the vice president, how the White House communications director was complaining, you're focusing just on this when we should be focusing on all these other things. Well, for the past 5 years, we've been trying to focus on other things, where they kept bringing things up like the Swift vote, you know, just ways to sort of neglect what really is important.
Yeah, they do it with smoke and mirrors and whatever suits them. I hope that everyone does something to get involved, because the reality is we have a Republican-controlled Senate, a legislature, and so impeachment is not likely. But
let alone that we have a Republican-controlled Supreme Court, state. The list just goes on and on. And not to say that Democrats always did everything right, but there is at least some balance of power.
Democrats have been complacent and compliant, and that needs to stop.
And they've also been shut out, too.
That's true.
Let's be real. You're listening to KPFT Houston, and we...
Also, 89.5 Galveston.
Yes.
We don't want to forget our...
I guess you didn't get that memo about how to do an ID. You say the call letters in the city.
That's right.
That's the legal ID. Anyway, we're getting in behind the scenes. Oh, speaking of which, if you have pledged through this long, 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 long pledge drive, which is now over, please do fulfill your pledge. And if you haven't pledged and you would like to, you can go to our website, kpft.org, because the money helps support the programming here on KPFT and the expenses for us to be able to do this type of programming.
And you can also call during business hours and pledge with a person on the phone, or come down to the station.
And you, like I said, you're listening to KPFT.
We're driving through the hills of West Virginia.
Album On a Clear Day. That was Natalie Zuckerman. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Deborah Bell along with
Jack Falinski.
And we're with Anissa Hill, the Communications Coordinator with the AIDS Foundation, Houston, and Michael Terrazas.
Terrazas.
Yeah. Well, okay, close enough. There's too many R's and a Z in there. It's confusing. And we're going to talk about, is it the 19th annual?
The 17th annual.
17th. Mm-hmm. I'm giving a couple of extra years there. But 17 years, that's pretty amazing.
It is.
To realize we've been dealing with it that long, to have an AIDS walk. And this is AIDS Walk 2006, which will take place March the 12th. So, first of all, tell us exactly what AIDS Foundation Houston is.
AIDS Foundation Houston is an organization that specializes in supportive services for those infected and affected with HIV. We have programs that provide food, rental assistance, even job training. We are constantly expanding our horizons, and actually we have just recently reached over $8 million budget in programs and services. So there's quite a few things that are part of AIDS Foundation Houston.
And AIDS Foundation Houston is an organization that would dearly love not to exist.
Absolutely. We always say that we'd be the happiest unemployed people in the world.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Most of us here at Queer Voices have been affected in some way by AIDS and have worked as activists and educators, and just by having the radio show, we like to get the word out about organizations and the issues that are involved. And so what happens with the AIDS walk? Exactly what does it mean to take part in an AIDS walk?
Well, the AIDS walk is extremely important for numerous reasons, one being just improving and increasing awareness about this illness. Unfortunately, there's still so many facades out there about this disease, and it's really important that we keep it at the forefront in our media and talk to our kids about it and just really keep it out there. This is a preventable disease, and I think that message is still, we constantly have to drive it to the general public, and we have to always change our message as well. Different populations are being affected, and as a result of that, if we are constantly changing our message so it can speak to that particular population, the number one population right now that we're finding is affected is African-American women. Mm-hmm. So the face of this illness is constantly changing, unfortunately, and it really affects all of us on all ethnicities, regardless of anything, and so it's really important that we keep this awareness. Also, the AIDS Walk funds quite a bit. In fact, AIDS Foundation Houston is predominantly ran by grants, and unfortunately, we are seeing a great decrease in funding, and so the AIDS Foundation, the AIDS Walk actually helps fill in those blanks of being able to fund the program.
Is it the single largest fundraiser that the foundation has?
It is, absolutely. Is our single largest fundraiser, correct.
And about how many people take part each year? Actually walk.
Last year we had 8,000 walkers, and this year we are hoping to bump that up to at least 10,000. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want to get everybody out there.
And Michael, in fact, is one of the walkers. This is your eighth year, or going to be your ninth?
This is going to be my eighth year,
uh-huh.
Which is amazing.
Uh-huh. And how did you get involved in being a walker?
Well, actually, in 1998 was my first walk, and it had always been since I graduated high school in 1993. I'm a part of something I wanted to do personally because I had seen so many people affected by it. And I think one major statement or misnomer that somebody in my family stated as I was a child was don't stop off on the sixth floor of a certain hospital in Houston because that's where all the AIDS patients are. You don't want to be infected. I think that was something that actually inspired me to want to be a part of it and continue on. So 1998 was the first time that I found myself actually pushing myself in the right direction and having the energy level that I needed to go out and pursue it. So 98 and 99, I actually did it on my own, not as part of a team. Wasn't aware of how to actually join a team. And then I started working with a major coffee company in the U.S. and became very involved with them. And it just continued on from there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm super excited about being a part of my eighth year.
And now do you go on a team?
I actually do have a team this year at Suzanne Anderson Properties. And this is going to be our first year as a team together. I'm hoping that we can do some great things.
Tell me a little bit more about the team concept. How does that work?
Well, you can actually participate in the AIDS Walk in many ways, and a team is an exciting way to actually gather your friends and people of your business or anyone you care to actually raise funds together as a group. And you have one team captain, and that particular person just helps everyone get motivated, gets people their materials that they need, and you know, a lot of fun teams create t-shirts for themselves, and so the pictures are just phenomenal. It's a sea of different colors of teams that are represented out in the walk.
Well, I really like the way that you know, you're encouraging people to walk, but people can also just donate. And your website is set up so that you can sponsor people, which is like, it makes it real easy.
Absolutely. You can participate in so many ways, whether that is sponsoring a participant, walking in honor of someone, or, you know, creating a team. There's many, many different ways. In fact, one of the exciting things we're doing this year is the Extra Mile Club. And what this means is anyone who dedicates themselves to raising $1,000, and they can actually be a part of a private breakfast with Anthony Rapp of Rent. So he is our Grand Marshal this year, and it's been really exciting to be able to integrate that into our walk. So that's one way to kind of get, you know, get everybody out there and get motivated. And, you know, the number one reason why people don't give is just simply because they're not asked. And the website is very user-friendly, and it's great because you can just click an email. You can upload your address book, click out an email, and it's a very, very comfortable way of being able to ask somebody, your friends and your family and your coworkers, to support you. So there's,
and what may that website be?
It's AIDSWalkHouston.org.
And someone is walking in my honor because I have a condition called fibromyalgia, and it causes fatigue, and I need exercise, but exercise is difficult for me because it causes complications with the condition, and it pretty much is, my energy is sapped, and I can get pretty incapacitated by the fatigue and the pain that my body is in. And there's an organization here in Houston called the Lazarus House. Mm-hmm. And the Lazarus House provides services, personal trainers to help people that have special conditions. Now, some people are maybe stroke survivors, some are HIV, AIDS, people with muscle wasting conditions. One young woman that I know of was in an automobile accident and was paralyzed, and so she goes there and receives services. And so my friend Donna is dedicating the walk to me so mm-hmm. that I can get services at the Lazarus House. But she put my picture up mm-hmm. on her page, and she's, you know, sending out to people so that they can know what all is involved with the AIDS walk and the kinds of things that the money goes for, because the Lazarus House team, they get 75% of the money raised by their team.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, Deborah. One of the exciting things that we do at the agency is we open up our AIDS walk, and I believe this is our, I want to say, fourth year to do this. We opened up our AIDS walk to other AIDS service organizations in the community, and Lazarus House being one of them. It's nearly 20 AIDS service organizations that participate in our walk, and we allow them to, you know, you use our tools to raise money for themselves, and they actually keep 75% of all the money that they raise. So really, when you are contributing to AIDS Walk Houston, you're not only contributing to AIDS Foundation Houston, you're really contributing to AIDS as a cause. So it's very exciting.
Right. And if anyone would like to know how they can donate through Donna's web page, they can contact me at thedivadeb at yahoo.com, and I will send you the link for that. And the where is the walk going to be? Do you know, Michael?
It's Sam Houston Park. So it starts in the historic.
You just go around and around the park.
No, not at all. You actually, everybody meets near the Sam Houston Park area. The race actually begins where it meets Eleanor Tinsley Park, pretty much. And you would take Allen Parkway up to Dallas, and you kind of circle back around through Montrose and back down Allen Parkway again, and you finish. So it's 3.2 miles.
And so you just hurry and run and as fast as you can.
I've seen people pretty much sit down every quarter of a mile and rest for a while, drink a glass of water or a bottle of water, or they walk the entire time. Some people jog it. They want to get it over with as soon as possible. My mentality has always been enjoy the company of the people that you're with, the team that you're with, and get to know as many people along the way as you can, because you never know.
Now, is there a T-shirt?
Yes, we do have incentive prizes for monies raised. And as I was saying earlier, a lot of teams, like if you were to join AIDS Foundation Houston team, we have a team T-shirt as well as Michael's team. So a lot of teams create their own T-shirts. However, we do incentive prizes for money raised beginning at $125, which is our T-shirt. And this year we'll have hats and a great huge golf umbrella and a backpack and some really exciting incentive prizes.
Well, great. That's wonderful. We've been talking with Anissa Hill from the AIDS Foundation Houston and Michael
Terrazas.
What kind of name is that? Italian?
No, my family's actually from Mexico.
Oh, that would be, but that would make sense.
Yes.
And we've been talking about AIDS Walk Houston, which will take place on Sunday, March the 12th, Sam Houston Park downtown. You can register today at www.aidswalkhouston.org. You can call 713-403-WALK. You can still sign up to be a walker. You can make your pledge. You can all be part of making it happen. Thank you. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
With this ring, I promise I'll always love you. With this ring, I promise I'll always love you.
Freedom to Marry Week was observed in the U.S. as part of the annual Valentine's Day Love Fest. Queer couples sought and were denied marriage licenses in several locales, while rallies and other events were held across the country. Country music icon Willie Nelson released a song about gay cowboys, which you'll hear later in the program, but perhaps most notable last week was the formation of a national coalition of queer people of color organizations aimed at advancing marriage equality in their respective communities. A media teleconference moderated by Lambda Legal Community organizer Renee Hill provided an opportunity for representatives of the newly partnered organizations to outline what they're doing and to discuss the similarities and differences they share in that task.
The purpose of the project is really twofold. The first is to have a forum for people of color, both gay and straight, who do support marriage equality, to be able to share their images and raise their voices and to be seen and heard as folks who are supporting marriage for same-sex couples. And the second purpose of this is to really debunk some of the images of people of color as only anti-marriage equality, to give some alternative images and to show a broader picture of what's really happening in communities. So there's an education component that's going on, focusing on an ad campaign to reach the broadest possible audience that we can have for this project. And to that end, we are launching widespread web presence featuring banner ads on websites such as Essence.com, Asian Avenue, Behente.com, and Toplock.com. So we have a second phase of this campaign, which is during June, which is Pride Month, and during the whole Pride season, which actually goes beyond June, we're going to be launching a traveling exhibition of photographs for the campaign. So people can come and see the photographs and hear from folks who are part of this campaign. We're hoping to place the photo exhibit in a variety of places, everywhere from places of worship to universities to art galleries, settlement houses, etc. We're also planning, as a second phase to our launch, to have made available more written material that's targeting people of color communities and why marriage matters to and for people of color. Marriage equality, same-sex marriage, is an issue for us. I'm going to introduce one by one the representatives from the partner organizations to make brief statements, and we're going to begin with Andy Wong, who is from Asian Equality.
Marriage equality matters to Asian Pacific Americans, and I'm going to refer to Asian Pacific Americans henceforth as APA because it confers important protections for our families, and nothing is more important to our community than making sure our families are safe, healthy, and intact. Indeed, for many APA same-sex couples, the struggle for equality is as much about challenging our second-class status as it is about safeguarding our families and children. It really should come as no surprise then that many APAs have helped and are helping to spearhead the struggle for marriage equality nationwide. Currently, APA same-sex couples serve as leading plaintiffs in lawsuits seeking the freedom to marry in California, Maryland, New York, and Washington states. And incidentally, the lead attorney in several of these suits is ACLU lawyer Kenneth Cho. It should also be noted that many of the most high-profile members of our APA community support marriage equality. Among them are Margaret Cho, Yoko Ono, Amy Tan, Doris DeKay, better known as Mr. Sulu, Helen Zia, Congressman Mike Honda, and even U.S. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta, who presently serves under the Bush administration. In addition to these individual support, many of the most prominent APA organizations in the country also back the issue. In 1994, the Japanese American Citizens League became the first non-gay organization after the American Civil Liberties Union to support the issue. Other APA organizations that have since declared support for marriage equality include the Asian American Justice Center in D.C., the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund in New York, Asian Law Caucus in San Francisco, Asian Pacific American Legal Center in L.A., and the Asian Pacific Islander Legal Outreach in San Francisco. To conclude, let me just say that APAs have faced a long history of discrimination in the United States, wartime internment, immigration restrictions, and laws banning interracial marriage. This legacy of exclusion and unequal citizenship remains painfully real today for same-sex couples within our communities. Given our history, APAs have a unique ability to recognize this injustice, and indeed we have been and will continue to be powerful voices in defense of pluralism, mutual respect, and security for all loving families, including those of devoted same-sex couples.
Next we have from the National Black Justice Coalition, Alexander Robinson.
Equality and justice certainly matters to African Americans, and I don't have to, I don't think, go into the history of discrimination and marginalization that has been experienced in all sectors of our community. Black Americans have had a long history in this country of facing discrimination in marriage. It began with our being excluded from the institution at all, to restrictions on our choices of marrying individuals who were not of our race or ethnicity. And so the fact that there are African Americans who are supportive of marriage equality, I think, stands to reason. I think that this campaign is important to build support in the community, although what we would also say is that if we waited on society and majority opinion to come around and legislative action, African Americans would still be enduring the indignities of separate but equal accommodations and other manifestations of legal, social, and political segregation. My experience of this collective action has, in and of itself, been unique and different. In that, as we do our individual organizational work and in our collective work, seldom do we all come together and begin to really have discussions about the similarities of the arguments we need to make, the similarities of the objections that we hear to moving forward with equality, but also the differences. And so I think that it helps us in that we all learn in the process. And I think that it also can be much more reflective of the kind of community that we want to create, that the sort of secondary message that we're sending is that, you know, we're looking to create a community that is diverse, and that if you travel around the country and you go to the Pride celebrations, that you can find our families are coming together in this way. And so I think that for that reason, having a sort of multiracial, multi-ethnic, and multicultural alliance and coalition makes sense.
From the National Latino Coalition for Justice, we have Martha Donaire.
The marriage debate is very powerful within and without the Latino context. In the Latino community, you know, we have always this impression that Latinos tend to be more homophobic, and in a way it is, and in a way it isn't. Latino families are very united, and families tend to come above everything else, which are not the same family values that are being espoused by the fundamental right wing here in the United States. Our family values are that of strong families, and strong families implies the inclusion of all. And I think that this is also important to keep in mind how we categorize communities of color. Especially in the Latino community, we don't have a so-called race. Latinos are an ethnic group, not a racial group. And we have Asian Latinos, we have blonde, blue-eyed Latinos, we have African-American Latinos, and we have brown Latinos. So we have a very, very... Oh, we have Middle Eastern Latinos, too. So we have a very, very broad spectrum when it comes to racial denominations, but Latino in itself is an ethnicity. So for us proper to be able to show a more comprehensive face is very, very important. And I do believe personally that we do have to shy away from the politics of categorizing people into little boxes, and we do have to understand that we are all one. In the future, we're not going to survive as separate entities, but only as one. And this is a basic first step in doing that. And again, from the Latino perspective, you know, it only makes sense to show a diverse face.
Okay, and finally, we're going to hear from Samia Bashir from Freedom to Marry.
It was really important for Freedom to Marry to join onto this campaign because, obviously, as the kind of national organization working on marriage equality around the country, this issue is very important to us. One thing that we understand is that it's important not only to kind of fight the right-wing spin that says that communities of color are not in support of marriage equality or not in support of equal rights and justice in general for lesbian, gay couples and their families, but also to let people help see the actual faces behind not only the lesbian and gay couples who are fighting for equal rights for themselves and their family, but the non-gay individuals, couples, families, neighbors, friends, community members, co-workers who are coming out and standing out and speaking out in support of marriage equality, fairness for all of their families, etc. What this campaign helps everybody understand is not just to see the faces and the voices behind the growing equal rights movement for marriage equality, but to help people understand why it's important for all of us to get behind this, to help make all of our communities stronger, make all of our communities safer, and help everybody understand the importance of getting behind, speaking out, and not letting anybody say who we are, what we believe. We can stand out and speak for ourselves.
You've been listening to highlights of a telephonic press conference about a new coalition of queer people of color organizations in the U.S. formed to advance marriage equality in their respective racial and ethnic communities. Participating groups included Asian Equality, the National Black Justice Coalition, the National Latino-Latina Coalition for Justice, Lambda Legal, and Freedom to Marry.
This is Queer Voices.
They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. The strongest leaves of my tree.
Every paper brings the news that
the teachers of my life are moving on.
Death comes and rests so heavy. Death comes and rests so heavy. Your face I'll never see. I'll never see you anymore. But I'm not really gonna leave you. I'm not really gonna leave you. You're not really gonna leave me. It is your path I walk. It is your song I sing. It is your load I take on. It is your air I breathe. It's the record you set that makes me go on. It's your strength that helps me stand. You're not real.
Tonight for the first
don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me.
Don't you want me?
You know I don't believe you when you say that you don't need me.
Not too late to find. Think you change your mind? You better change it back or we will both be sorry. Don't you want me, baby? Precious kisses, words that burn me. Love has never asked you why.
Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me cry? Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me
and a piano. Yeah, that's what they call themselves, Four Poofs and a Piano. And that was called Extreme 80s from their album Screamin' Party Anthems. And then before that, this is from a compilation of things that J.D. put together for us. We had Michael Callan, Healing Power of Love, from his album Inspirational. And now we're going to hear the last segment that we have for you today from This Way Out.
The notion that all country music singers are homophobes, Willie Nelson was one such crooner to contribute a tune to the Brokeback Mountain soundtrack. He's now released a song on Valentine's Day last week that questions cowboy sexuality, written by Texas-born singer-songwriter Ned Sublette in 1981. Although it's also been recorded by queer groups Pansy Division and Rick and Andy, the song has been in the closet for 20 years, Nelson told reporters. The timing's right for it to come out, he said. I'm just opening the door. Here's a slightly edited for radio version of his Cowboys Are Frequently Secretly Fond of Each Other.
Well, there's many a strange impulse out on the plains of West Texas. There's many a young boy who feels things he can't comprehend. And a small town don't like it when somebody falls between sexes. No, a small town don't like it when a cowboy has feelings for men. And I believe to my soul that inside every man there's the feminine. And inside beside every lady, there's a deep manly voice loud and clear. Well, the cowboy may brag about things that he's done with his women, but the ones that brag loudest are the ones that are most likely queer. Cowboys frequently, secretly fond of each other. Say, what do you think all them saddles and boots was about? And there's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels for his brother. And inside every cowboy there's a lady that'd love to slip out. Says what the others just whisper, and mostly that someone's the first one to get shot down dead. So when you talk to a cowboy, don't treat him like he was a sister. You can't up with a lady that's sleeping in each cowboy's head. Cowboys are frequently, secretly fond of each other. What did you think all them saddles and boots was about? And there's many a cowboy who don't understand the way that he feels for his brother. And inside every lady there's a cowboy who wants to come out. And inside every cowboy, there's a lady that loves to slip out.
That was Cowboys Are Frequently Secretly Fond of Each Other, performed by Willie Nelson. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. The Platters performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WTIP Grand Marais, Minnesota, KDHX St. Louis, Missouri, to BOB Terre, New South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.
And, of course, this community radio station is KPFT Houston, and you're listening to Queer Voices. Now, if that song that was played, Cowboys Are Frequently Secretly Fond of Each Other by Willie Nelson, if that sounded familiar to you, that's because we have played it here on the show before. If you're a frequent or longtime listener, you've heard it. The version that we have, and I don't know if this is really the original one or not, is by Pansy Division from their album Pile Up from 1995. And it's actually very similar. So rather than play that song again just to prove that it's there and we have it, I thought what I would do instead is play the Two Cowboy Waltz as kind of a segue to what Willie Nelson just did. And this is by Mark Weigel.
Love so long. I said it's cool that he ever knew. Keep away from a runaround stew.
Runaround Stew from an album appropriately titled A Cappella by the group Referendum on Queer Voices. You all have something to say?
Well, I think we have a few things to talk about. First of all, happy President's Day. Not the current president, but
yes,
of course,
even though he was complaining that he was working, had to work today.
Had to work on a holiday. Gee,
yeah.
Times are rough all over. You know, there was some speculation that Abraham Lincoln may have been gay. Several gay scholars fueled that speculation, and one cited a diary entry noting that Lincoln invited his bodyguard to share a bed at the presidential retreat in the First Lady's absence. Other scholars say men sharing beds was common in practice then. And the conclusion is that Honest Abe was straight. It makes me think that, you know, there's some people that we really wouldn't want to claim.
Yes.
You know, like J. F. Edgar Hoover and you know, some other people who's like, well, okay, if they're gay, they're gay, but we don't necessarily want them. And, of course, presidents get to be presidents by elections, at least.
Fair elections.
Yeah, well, sometimes not fair ones that get to be president. And we have early voting in the primary.
Starting tomorrow. And you can go to the, actually, harrisvotes.org.
Right.
Is the website, which is usually very good. For the next, like, week and a half, there is early voting. There's, like, 30 different locations throughout Harris County. And if you would like to know who the Houston GLBT Political Caucus recommends, go to the website. It's hglbtpc.org, or just hglpc.org is easier to remember. And there is a voting recommendation card there. And it's important to vote.
Yeah, this is a primary election. It's for state offices. And I don't know that there's any amendments or referendum involved, but not in the primary. But there are a few people that are running unopposed. But this is a chance to, you know, make your voice heard, participate in the process. If you intend to vote for Kiki Friedman or Carol Strayhorn, you cannot vote in the primary.
You're saying that wrong.
Oh.
If you tend to sign a petition for them to get on the ballot in the fall, you cannot vote in the primary.
Right. Okay, I was saying the opposite.
Right.
If you sign their petitions, you should not participate in the primary.
Well, you cannot sign their petitions till after the primary.
Oh, okay.
That's the way it's set up.
Okay, and you can't have voted in the primary.
In the primary,
if you're going to do that.
Right. In the fall, you can vote for anybody who's on the ballot.
Right.
So that's just sort of a way that you only can participate in one party's sort of selection of candidates for the general election.
Right.
We don't go through that in odd years because city elections are nonpartisan.
Right. And what did you do this weekend, Jack?
What did I do this weekend? Well, I worked as usual.
Speaking of elections.
It was Grand Marshal, the last weekend of Grand Marshal voting.
For the Pride.
For Pride,
month.
Grand Marshals. And that will be announced on March 2nd at Guava Lamp between 7 and 9 p.m. And then, of course, it will be up on the website.
So is that kind of the kickoff, really, for Pride season?
Well, Pride season is always going on.
24/7 with Jack Walensky.
Right.
And we want to remind people that if they pledged during our recent fund drive, to please honor their pledge as soon as possible. And if you haven't pledged, you can go to the website, www.kpft.org. Also important to remind you that if you, for some reason, miss Queer Voices, you can access the online archives, And I think for 60 days, they archive the shows, so you can tune in.
Right. For some reason, last week's show isn't on there. And since I wasn't here, I wanted to listen to
it. Yeah, to check us out, see how we did without you. It's harder without you here. And I heard from someone, I'm a contact dyke for the Lesbian Connection, a publication that goes around the world that is, well, it's been around for 30 years now. And I was contacted by a woman from Michigan who's looking to move down to Houston and wanted some information about the community. And she was really excited to hear that we had an NPR station and a station like Pacifica and that there's a radio show. And she said she's already listening to some of the archives.
Oh, great.
So she can get a taste of what the Houston community is like. And the Willie Nelson, you know, he sang that song about cowboys secretly being fond of each other, but his song from Brokeback Mountain, He Was a Good Friend of Mine, is nominated for an Academy Award.
Which is coming up in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's the 5th.
Yes, and Jon Stewart's going to be hosting it, which ought to be interesting.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. So, beautiful song. That song from Brokeback. And
well, the whole movie just, I mean, even if it wasn't for all the gay elements and how wonderful it was, just the way Ang Lee did all the scenery was just really incredible. I love movies, and especially movies like that. And it's amazing there's a lot of independent films that are nominated, including Capote, for a number of awards. And we had some, you know, really good movies this past year.
Right. And Joan Devlin will be interviewing the writer of the book about Capote on which the film is based. I think March 13th is when we have that scheduled. So
I'll have to listen.
Yeah, they'll be. We should listen to this show more, Jack.
Yes, we should.
It would do us good.
We know what we're doing then. Well, we want to thank everybody who helped us tonight, and we miss our friends who are usually on the show.
Yeah, but they'll be returning.
Including J.D. Doyle, who's going to be doing Queer Music Heritage next week.
It's amazing how he gets to be here even when he's not here.
Right, or gets to be talked about.
Yeah.
Well, he contributed to this Way Out, the audio file. Next week, we're also going to be interviewing Jody Huckabee, who is the executive director of PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbian and Gay Gays. We're going to be interviewing over phone because he's coming to Houston the following week.
And then we will have Queer Music Heritage and, of course, This Way Out, an internationally syndicated program.
Yes, and if you're interested in being on the show or having your group on the show or have some suggestions, you can email me, jack@queervoices.org. And I certainly want to thank Deborah. She's now doing the scheduling, and she sees how tough it is.
It is.
Yeah. But we do, you know, our show is about the community, so we really want to be as representative as possible. So if you have some ideas, or if you want to get involved in the show for some reason, you can email me. And I think we're just about out of time now.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank Liz McLean from Assist Hers being on talking about the softball tournament coming up March the 4th at Memorial Park. Glenn interviewed Eric Thomas and Clarence Lanier in recognition of Black History Month. And then Anissa Hill and Michael Terraza talking about AIDS Walk Houston number 17 on March the 12th. You can find out more about the AIDS Walk. Sign up to be a walker. Join a team. AIDSWalkHouston.org.
Okay. And Glenn, is it time to slip on out of here?
Well, actually, I think we have time for just one more short piece of music.
Okay.
Go for it.
That was Pansy Division from their album The Essential. You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.